Good afternoon. The Portland City Council meeting shall come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Saltzman?
Here.
Hales?
Okay, Carla, please read this item.
Item 1060, appeal of Central Eastside Industrial Council against the Design Commission's decision to approve with conditions the LOCA Goat Blocks mixed-use project at 1004 to 1036 Southeast Belmont Street, LU14-125-908-DZMAD.
Okay, I'm going to ask Lindley Reese, our attorney, to describe the hearing and how it will be conducted.
Well, these announcements are required by state law, and they're going to describe the way the hearing will be conducted, including the kind of testimony, kind of hearing, and the scope of testimony that will be heard today. It's an evidentiary hearing. This means you may submit new evidence to counsel in support of your arguments. I'll talk about the order of testimony first. We'll begin with a staff report by BDS for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, counsel will hear from interested persons in the following order. Appellants go first and have 10 minutes to present their case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next, and each person will have 3 minutes to speak to counsel. Next, the principal opponent, in this case the applicant, will have 15 minutes to address counsel and rebut the appellant's presentation. And after the principal opponent, the counsel will hear from the people who oppose the appeal, that is, they support the application. Again, each of these people will have 3 minutes. And finally, the appellants will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the opponents of the appeal. There are several guidelines I'd like to announce when you're addressing counsel today. First, when submitting evidence to the record, any letters or documents you wish to become part of the record should be given to the counsel clerk over there after you testify. Similarly, the original or a copy of any slides, photographs, drawings, maps, videos, or other items you show to counsel during your testimony, including PowerPoint presentations, should be given to the counsel clerk to make sure they're included in the record. Second, your testimony must be directed to the approval criteria. Any testimony, arguments, and evidence you present must be directed toward the applicable approval criteria for the design review in this case, or other criteria in the city's plan or zoning code that you believe apply to the decision. BDS staff, as part of their presentation, will identify the applicable approval criteria. Third, any issue you want to raise must be raised with specificity. It must be raised clearly enough to give the council and the other parties an opportunity to respond to that issue. If you do not raise an issue with specificity, you will be precluded from appealing that to the Land Use Board of Appeals on that issue. Finally, an applicant must identify constitutional challenges to any conditions of approval. If they fail to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow counsel to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court. And that concludes my remarks.
Okay, thank you, Lindley. Do any members of the council have ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside of the hearing to disclose? Okay, seeing none. Do any members of council have any questions or other preliminary matters that need to be addressed before we begin the hearing? Okay, then why don't we begin with the staff report? Hi.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Mark Wallen, Bureau of Development Services. I have Kurt Kruger here with me today. Kurt's actually going to do the majority of the presentation, but I have a few introductory slides to sort of set the stage. As Lindley mentioned, we have the case before us today as LU14-125908-DZMAD for LOCA / GOAT Blocks. Just a quick orientation to where we are in the city. It's a vacant site in the Central East Side, shown in the foreground of this slide. Just half a block west of 12th Avenue, which is the dividing line, the boundary line for the central city in the Buckman neighborhood. This is an aerial view of the project as approved from a sort of imaginary place in the air hovering over the Grand Central Bowl looking southeast. You can see the super block in the foreground with a northern building with the tan brick base. That's the grocery store on the ground floor with apartments above. Small little retail building in the foreground. That's right on 10th Avenue, sort of heading off to the right in the distance. The red brick building on the right is on the south of side of the big super block. That's the hardware store on the ground floor with apartments above. And then you can see beyond, heading up Belmont on the left distance, a white and black building. That's the smaller four-story building on the east side of 11th Avenue. The project is over 96,000 square feet of retail, 247 apartments, and 385 parking spaces. There's 246 commercial and 139 residential spaces. This is just a site plan, giving you an orientation to the surrounding streets. We have Belmont on the north and 11th bisecting the site sort of on the east. The two streets you're going to hear most about today in testimony are the south and west border streets, which is 10th Avenue and Taylor Street, circled in this diagram. This diagram also sort of shows the public walkways bisecting the large superblock site in east-west. That's in alignment with Yamhill Street. And then a secondary public walkway sort of squeezing between those green eco-roofs, heading north from that Yamhill walkway to a grand stair that descends down to Belmont at 10th. I'm not going to spend time on this. I actually gave council members a copy of this map. It's just the immediate vicinity and all the adjacent property owners identified on the site plan. You'll hear from several of those folks today, I believe. This just shows you where they are in relation to the site. The zoning is pretty straightforward. It is a split-zoned site. The majority of the site is central employment with design overlay, but we're an edge site or a transitional site that abuts industrial sanctuary land, IG1 zoning on the west and on the south. There is a portion of the site on the east side of 11th, south of that black line, if you look in this picture, that is in the industrial zone. That portion of the site in the IG1 zone is not under designer view. There's no D, so that's not under consideration today. The Belmont and 11th Avenue street frontages are transit and walkways in the city's transportation designations. 11th and Taylor, the streets circled in green that you'll be hearing a lot about today, are both local service streets. The entire area is a freight district. This slide also just identifies the approval criteria, which are the Central City Fundamental Design Guidelines, Central East Side Design Guidelines, and the adjustment criteria in Chapter 805 of the Zoning Code, the modification criteria in Chapter 825. We had some concurrent adjustments and modifications. I'm not going to spend time on those today, unless there's questions. They're not really part of the appeal. And there is a separate Central City parking review that's underway. They've submitted it. It's incomplete, but that is going on parallel. The process began and ended this year. We had two design advice requests early in the year. There were three hearings over the course of the summer. And in August, the Design Commission approved the request with several conditions of approval. Again, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this today. I can come back with questions, but the specific design and the issues addressed and the conditions do not appear to be the subject of the appeal today. This slide I want to spend a little bit of time on. The land use review has a set of approval criteria, which are the Central City Design Guidelines, Central East Side Design Guidelines, and the approval criteria for the modifications and the adjustments. Those criteria have been cited by the appellant in their appeal, but are not the focus of their appeal issues or the focus of their prior testimony, which has addressed Title 17 and public improvements, so work in the street. The appeal today, the land use review appeal, to the council findings need to find a nexus to the relevant design guidelines or the land use approval criteria in Title 33. Moving to the second bullet, Title 17, which is why we have Kurt here today, addresses public improvements in the right-of-way. If you're building a project, Portland Transportation will tell you to do X, Y, and Z public improvements out in the right-of-way. If you do the city standard improvements in the right-of-way, the zoning code does not apply. You don't need design review. You're sort of out of the zoning code once you cross the property line and into the right-of-way. You're going to hear a lot today about street cross sections and roadway widths and sidewalk widths. Those are all decisions that have been made under the authority of Kurt Kruger, given to them in Title 17, public improvements. So there are sort of two issues happening here today. We're here for a land use review that has Title 33 zoning code criteria. you're going to hear a lot about the public streets. If staff's recommendation would be that if council has feedback or input on the Title 17 determinations, sidewalk widths, roadway widths, wanting CURT basically to change the decision that was made with regards to those issues in the street, staff would recommend that those be sort of directed to CURT in a, I don't know what the right word is to use, gentleman's agreement, yet CURT's, you know, face nodding up and down that he will implement your direction. But we don't want to tie that Title 17 decision by council to the land use review appeal. So I can see sort of a motion maybe talking about the appeal and addressing the Title 33 criteria, and then maybe with some friendly advice or direction to CURT on the street improvements. If that makes sense, that's sort of the basic split I was trying to make clear in this presentation.
But CURT's above the purview of the city council?
That's CURT. Well, no, no, but...
Something like that.
CURT's, yeah, sideways from the land use stuff, yeah, pretty much. The appellants have addressed and raised issues about various comprehensive plan goals and policies and the purpose statements for the EXD zone. Those aren't relevant and have no hook in either the Title 17 world or the land use review world for a design review. Finally, we do have a 120-day waiver signed. And that is all I have. I'm going to let CURT take over.
Thank you, Mark. Any questions before we move on to the next part of the presentation? If you'll indulge me for a minute, I think Mark did a very good job of describing the kind of the juxtaposition between Title 17 and Title 33. PBOT is an advisory role in the Title 33 design review process. We actually don't have approval criteria in Title 33, but our requirements have a substantial impact on a lot of projects. So it's important that PBOT is in the equation, part of the conversation with the design review staff and the applicant early on in this process, so we can work together to make sure our requirements mix well with the Title 33 design review requirements. This project started slightly before Mark's timeline with a pre-application conference last year with the city staff and the applicant. And at that time, city staff, including my staff, identified all the public improvement needs and dedications, right-of-way requirements that were required. And this was a unique and difficult conversation with the applicant because they have four sides to their property. And PBOT was asking for a number of dedications, property exactions, from the applicant to fit the city's goals around sidewalk widths. So if we walk around the site briefly, PBOT asked for about 4 feet of right-of-way from the applicant on Belmont to achieve the 12-foot sidewalk that the city would desire on Belmont. We asked for a couple feet of right-of-way on 11th to achieve the same, and we did that on Taylor and on 10th. And at that time, the applicant was working on trying to anchored their anchor tenants, which were relatively large big box floor plates that needed fairly substantial square footage to make their projects work. So we entered into a conversation with the applicant and the engineer looking at the street widths on Southeast 10th and on Taylor, and realized that those streets exceeded our district standard dimensions from a curb to curb width. And we looked at the right-of-way and said, if we reprogram the right-of-way, more specifically narrowing the street width a little bit, we could avoid having to exact more property from the applicant and get the city's goals both on street widths, parking widths, and sidewalk widths within the existing right-of-way. We don't do this very often because most applicants would generally prefer to dedicate a couple more feet of property rather than going through the costly expense of taking out existing curb, sidewalk, and the necessary stormwater improvements. But in this case, this applicant was going to be basically tearing the entire site down and going down to put in the parking structure. And so there was a willingness to reconstruct this curb into the street and narrow it a little bit. That has some minor side benefits, but worth noting. Obviously, if we're reducing the street width, that's reducing impervious width. That helps from a stormwater standpoint. And then PBOT knows that there is also a traffic calming effect if we have streets that are a little tighter and narrower. So there were some side benefits that were available by making this decision. So we reached out and had some conversations with the CEIC and property owners, and this is where kind of the rubber met the road with this appeal. Changing the street width in this industrial area next to this EX zone property raised concerns from property owners you're going to hear today. And it raised enough concerns that we elevated this to actually bringing a truck out to the site, placing cones and markings on the streets to predict and operate it as if the new improvements were in, and wanted to make sure there were no problems identified. So I have a couple slides here that illustrate that. In the upper left corner, we're looking at the corner of Southeast 10th and Taylor. This is the truck that we brought out. It's the largest truck that we could bring out. That's the largest of the trucks that we understand are used in this area. The orange cones and the white markings represent the narrowing of the street. And you'll see in the upper right, that truck maneuvered around the corner, did not hit any of the cones, had plenty of room to spare. As we moved around to the lower left and the lower right, we moved further up 10th near Yamhill. And if we'll move to the next slide, Mark. We actually found a problem. This was at the intersection of 10th and Yamhill, where cars are actually parked today where they should not park. This is the middle of an intersection. We don't have signs out there that are restricting parking today, but we found that the cars parked there today were creating a problem. And so we were going to mark this as no parking. And later on, I'll show you another graphic. I think it's the next slide. Yeah, the next slide, Mark. The red circle there indicated a curb extension that was preliminarily proposed at that intersection. We've taken that off of the table after we conducted that field visit, recognizing that that would make matters even worse. So by removing that design element, putting in some no parking signs, we're actually going to make some truck maneuvering improvements for one of the property owners. The next slide illustrates the street widths, the preferred and the accepted. And the street widths, the curb-to-curb street widths will exceed the preferred slightly. I think it's about 12.2 feet. So they're still meeting our guidelines for a freight district street that this is. And then moving to the last couple slides here, if we need to get into the detail later in the conversation, this highlights the actual specific dimensions of the curb to curb and parking sidewalk widths. At this point, I'll turn it over to Mark on what council's alternatives will be later on in the hearing. I will say, just before I turn it over, there has been a numerous amount of conversation, discussion. This has been a difficult process trying to reach agreement. You're going to hear some ideas that have come up in the last 24 hours as far as compromises. We're still wrapping our head around some of those, and we're going to wait till we hear where they've landed at this point today, and would expect to come back up in front of council and have a discussion about what those would look like. As you hear this testimony, my advice to council would be that any ideas that come up regarding parking limitations, parking hours, not be conditions of approval of this project. And I think that's an important point for council, because parking signage, parking operations change over time. Tenants move and go, property owners change. The beauty of parking signs is we can adjust and conform to the needs that are on the street. We don't want to be back before council with another Type 3 land use review to change a parking sign from a 6 to 2 to a 6 to 10. And I think council would understand why we would not want to put you in that position of having to help make those determinations.
So, well, is there a process for anybody but the applicant to appeal the Title 17 requirements that PBOT decides on?
There is not.
So, and is there any remedy in court? Like, a neighborhood could go to LUBA if they don't like the land use decision. There's neither an administrative appeal nor a court appeal.
I hate to turn this over to Lindley, but that was a legal question, and I'm going to defer.
If it's Title 17, it's not going to end up at LUBA. I don't think I'd want to speculate on what their legal remedies might be. I think it might be different if it were a case where the street widths weren't meeting our already established standards. In fact, somebody might argue that they basically, you'd have a chance to have argued those standards when those were adopted by PBOT or council at some point in time. And so maybe they'd be foreclosed from doing that, but that is dangerous to speculate on.
That's a good point, that they do meet the standard in the code right now. You're not doing any kind of a adjustment. Is there such a thing as an adjustment in Title 17? Or
Not that I'm aware of. If we had proposed to reduce these below a district standard, I think we would have opened this up to a much more global conversation engagement of property owners. Because we have those standards and we're adhering to those, we felt like we were operating within the guidelines.
But you don't have any kind of formal process for that?
We have a public works appeals process an applicant can go through to appeal and ask for reconsideration of our requirements, but we don't have anything beyond that.
I think this is an important consideration in the comprehensive plan discussions, is our shared ownership of the public right-of-way and what kind of remedies and what kind of decision-making processes there are, both to set up the standards and then when the standards are not met. That's a different conversation. I appreciate the clarification.
Great. Any other questions? No.
Were you going to outline the options of approval?
Yep. So just briefly, council has the standard three alternatives with regards to the land use appeal. Deny the appeal, allowing the project to proceed per the Design Commission's conditional approval. That would be with or without the sort of sidebar separate direction to PBOT regarding Title 17 issues. And then the second option would be to accept the appeal with the modification of the project's approval, changing something in the decision, or accepting the appeal and denying the project outright.
Okay, great. Any further questions of Mark or Kurt before we open it up? Okay. So now we'll hear from the appellant, which is the Central East Side Industrial Council.
So
okay, so you have
10 minutes.
10 minutes, and there's a clock in front of you. And if you can just give us your name, if you're speaking.
So I'm Peter Finley Fry. I'm vice chair of the CEIC Land Use Committee, and I want to compliment Killian on how much outreach they did. They did a pretty excellent job. However, as part of this process, we've encountered two procedural flaws that we needed to raise to your attention. Both Title 17 and 33 are separate. We recognize that. They both are under the comprehensive plan and need to be consistent with the Portland Comprehensive Plan. The first issue, I call it the paper wall. We absolutely agree with the city engineer's authority, and that comes at the building permit time, and the city engineer decides about exaction. And that has happened to me almost every project I've ever been involved in. We're arguing that the design review decision has created a wall where it does not exist today. It's vacant superblock. That's our first concern. So in other words, we're arguing that the design review decision ties the hands of the city engineer. The second argument is that in the comprehensive plan, in the central employment policy statement, it specifically says residential uses are allowed but should be compatible with the surrounding industrial development. Yet there are no findings made about how this design does not adversely impact surrounding industrial uses. So the zoning code is not implementing the comprehensive plan. That's it. Thanks.
Hey, commissioners, my name is Jeff Kleinman. I represent Gatto & Sons, which is the produce company directly across 10th from the site between Belmont and Southeast Yamhill. You've got a letter in the record from Gatto and Sons dated yesterday, and I'll tell you with apologies, you have a short letter from me of today's date that I was delayed getting out to you. Gatto and Sons is a member of the Central East Side Industrial Council. It is located in the IG1 zone, which is part of the industrial sanctuary. They distribute produce that comes in on large semis, as is described in Kathleen Gatto's letter to you. Gatto & Sons supports this appeal. And further along to Mr. Fry's analogy or metaphor of a paper wall, we agree with that. And what we see here, by leaving key elements of the design review to be decided separately, by PBOT in an administrative process in the course of the issuance of a building permit, that's an improper deferral of that part of the review of the design, because it can change in that process in terms of sidewalk width, street width, et cetera. Those are key elements of the design. And there is no public process, no right to participate that is established in that process. So we have a concern about that, and we have concerns that we've identified in the letter that I have submitted. Under the specific approval criteria that apply to this application, and those are the special design guidelines for the design zone of the Central East Side District of the Central City Plan. Among those, guideline A21 says recognize transportation modes, produce, and commerce as primary themes of East Portland, and that's really not occurred here. And then in the letter, we've also identified the goals and policies of the transportation element of the comp plan, which is also the transportation system plan, which are implemented by the design guidelines, and they serve as a direction for interpreting the guidelines. And those include in freight districts such as this, providing safe and convenient truck mobility as a priority, and access in industrial and employment areas. Freight district streets, of which Southeast 10th here is one, provide local truck access and circulation to industrial and employment land uses. And freight district streets should be designed to facilitate the movement of all truck types and over-dimensional loads as practicable, and that's not been recognized here. In fact, one of the objectives under policy 6.30 for truck mobility is to accommodate truck travel on designated truck streets, which this is, through improvements to facility design and operations that address the dimensional needs of trucks. So the point is that even though technically there's apparently to be compliance with the minimum street standards for travel lanes, that, as set out in Mrs. Gatto's letter and as she will talk about, is insufficient to allow for the movement of the semis and the oversized loads, which are essential to the operation of this business, which in turn employs 22 people with family wage jobs. So those are my comments under the approval criteria. And in the remaining time,
Before you continue, I just want to make sure I understand something. In your letter, you cite to policy that references East Portland. Now, that's very interesting. I don't know when this was written, but we typically think of East Portland in this body as the part of the city that's on the other side of 205. What's your understanding of the definition of East Portland?
East of the river. This goes back quite a ways, I believe, to the early 90s, if I'm not mistaken. So it refers to what we traditionally thought of as East Portland and not the current definition, which includes, I think, mostly annexed areas from mid-county. So that's what this refers to. And these policies are listed under the Central East Side industrial district component of the design guidelines. So in that context, East Portland is east of the river. Now, that said, I've had conversations with the applicant's attorney, Dana Kravchuk, and conversations with Kurt Kruger from PBOT, who's been very helpful and very accessible, which we appreciate. And he and I worked on some language which, if it appears in the form of a city council directive, my client could live with and would satisfy my client's concerns. As he has said to you, he told me, they really didn't want a condition of approval on signage for parking because it's too tedious then to go back to a land use process to change it. But he indicated to me that PBOT could live with a directive from council. And I think it would have to be clear in the record. And what we've requested, and I don't think that PBOT would oppose, that's my understanding, is that the east side of Southeast 10th, between Southeast Belmont and Southeast Yamhill, be signed for no parking truck loading zone from 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. So on the one hand, that addresses our concern with overnight parkers because they're usually not out by 6 a.m., so they wouldn't park there. We get deliveries very late at night, early in the morning. We have no control over when the semis arrive from California, from Arizona, especially in winter weather conditions. So they tend to come during those hours and then in the earlier part of the day, but 2 p.m. is a reasonable cutoff for us and at the same time facilitates the restaurants and retail businesses that the applicant would locate there. So that would be the signage per a direction from this council, and there would be three circumstances under which that signage could be modified. This is stuff that I've worked through with Kurt, and one is that PBOT determines that for safety reasons, more extensive limitations should be placed on parking on that side of the street between Belmont and Yamhill. Second, if the owners of the affected properties, so that would be the owner of the Killian development, the owner of the Gatto and Sons property, and the city agree, as Kurt was talking about, you know, revisit things after this project is up and running and see if there are changes that everybody agrees are worthwhile, then so long as PBOT signs off, those changes in the signage could be made. And then the third would be if there's a material change in the use of the Gatto property so that the need for truck access to the property is eliminated or becomes minimal. So that contemplates that down the road, should things change and the property be sold and no longer operate in this manner, and there's no need for the parking limitations on the other side of the street, those could be eliminated without coming back to council. So those are the things we've talked about. As I said, I've spoken with Dana Kravchuk, the applicant's counsel, and I believe that so long as PBOT is amenable to this directive from council, that the applicant would not oppose it either. With that, happy to answer any questions.
Peter, are you saying in your testimony that no finding was made under the applicable plan goal or that an inadequate finding was made?
Well, that's correct.
No, which of the two?
I'm sorry. I didn't understand it was neither or.
Oh.
Sorry.
Is your view that no finding was made or that there was an inadequate finding?
No findings in relationship to the impact on surrounding industrial uses.
And is it required to be made explicit or can it be viewed implicit in the decision?
I'm not an attorney. I don't know how to answer that, actually.
And the language you cite to, and I understand the flashpoint around residential uses generally, says are allowed but should be compatible with the surrounding industrial development, should be compatible.
I think that's not exactly what it says.
Residential uses are allowed, but should be compatible. I'm just reading.
That's
from your
correct. Letter. You're right. Okay.
And are allowed, but should be compatible. And your letter says that your interpretation of that is that the design commission should make specific findings about how the design does not adversely impact the industrial areas. That seems like a more stringent requirement than I see just reading the language, and I'm open to being persuaded.
Well, the situation is that in the past, the EXD property weren't really being redeveloped. In fact, we had very little redevelopment up to about 4 years ago, and now we're getting inundated with a lot of residential properties being redeveloped. I think we have 1,500 units coming online, and that's fine because that's where they're supposed to come online, but it's created the stress point now between the surrounding industrial uses and these new high-rise buildings. The Design Commission approved a very high-rise building on the east end of the Burnside Bridge, so this wasn't really an issue in the past. It's just now becoming an issue as these uses are being developed and starting to create incompatible options is what I'm getting at, which is why we're raising it now.
And I'm just curious, do you have specific examples of how you believe it would adversely impact the surrounding activities?
Traffic, where the loading docks go, where the access to the garages go, noise impacts, view line impacts. We did it a long time ago. There was a zone change they actually required, and you cannot do that as part of design review, to force the residents to waive their rights to remonstrate against industrial activities. That's not something you can do in a design review. You can do that in a zone change. So those are kind of some of the things. And I did want to say one more thing in my last 35 minutes, but I'll be happy to answer more questions.
Oh, yeah, the president can extend your time as long as you want.
Okay.
Well, no, we'll stick with the 35 seconds you have left.
So I just want to be clear that Central Eastside Industrial Council is an acknowledged, recognized business association. The decision to appeal was made at an open meeting, our land use committee. Neighborhood people, the applicant, and city staff attended that meeting, and we had a full airing of everybody's views. So I want to be clear on the record that that's how it went.
Okay.
Thank you.
Additional questions?
Mr. President, I just wanted to note that I have a somewhat different impression of an agreement between Gatto and Sons and PBOT that might be acceptable to PBOT than Mr. Kleinman outlined, and we could possibly have Kurt Kruger come back up to discuss that now, or maybe it's appropriate to defer that until after we've heard the rest of the appeal.
Why don't we bring Kurt up?
Well, may I ask a question of the transportation commissioner? Are you representing an appellant, or is this a companion issue?
My client is a member of the appellant, so we're speaking for the appeal. But in terms of this agreement, it is only as to my individual client.
And that's a Title 17 issue.
Well, that's the question.
Okay, fair enough.
I would actually appreciate having both the staff come back up, because I'm more confused than I was when we started.
Okay, why don't you two take your seats, and we'll bring Mark and Kurt back up. This is a little confusing.
Well, it's a tricky land use appeal because a lot of the issues that were just raised are Title 17, which is not land use. Did you want to go first with what you were proposing, and then I'll ask my question?
Yes, if I may. Mr. Kruger, do you mind going over what we discussed in my office 20 minutes ago?
Again, for the record, Kurt Kruger, Transportation. The discussions last night included not a condition, but a direction to PBOT to implement a parking restriction on the east side of 10th that would appear to be agreeable by Gatto & Sons, Killian Pacific, the developer, and NBH, National Builders Hardware, which is the property directly to the south of Gatto & Sons. It was my understanding that parking restriction would be limited to 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday. And shortly before the hearing, came to my attention that may not be the exact terms for the National Builders Hardware block, the block to the south. They were asking for additional restrictions from, I believe, 6 a.m. to either 5 or 6 p.m. in the evening.
Mr. Gregory, I thought that what we were going to suggest was, rather than council directing PBOT to do something, simply having PBOT state in the record that we will establish parking restrictions along Southeast 10th specifically, and that with the caveat that we will review those parking restrictions 6 months after the building is occupied to determine if the restrictions are appropriate. So we would put in the record that we would do that, but not go through a process of council directing us to do that.
That's correct. And so for the record, we would be implementing the restrictions as mentioned, and then a commitment to revisit this within about 6 months of occupancy after the building has been filled, and we assess the situation and see if we got it right the first time or if we need to make some modifications.
Thank you. That sounds like a good legislative intent. Mark, why are the approval approval criteria listed as the Central City Design Guidelines Central East Site Design Guidelines? Why are they not listed out in the decision and findings made against each of them?
They are. The design guidelines are listed out with findings.
I must have the short form in my packet.
Yep. There's a long. The final decision is 31 pages.
No, I don't have that. All right. So can you tell me, please, what the findings were regarding the cited Central East Side Design Guideline for, regarding housing?
The guideline he mentioned was A21, recognized transportation modes, produce, and commerce as primary themes of East Portland in the testimony just now.
No, the one that Mr. Fry referenced about housing needing to be compatible with the industrial district.
Peter mentioned the Goal 10, the comprehensive plan, Goal 10 findings. There are no Goal 10 findings in the staff report or the final decision because they're not a relevant criterion.
Thank you. All right.
So they're just not there because they're not in the code as applying.
Now I've got what I need. Thank you. I'll be reviewing that and hope everybody's ready to testify on whatever you want to testify on.
They're not irrelevant criteria to what the Design Commission was asked to rule on?
The comp plan goal that it was in Peter's letter and he mentioned Goal 10. No,
that's not. It's not relevant criteria to the Design Commission proceeding?
Correct. There was another guideline mentioned, A21, that is relevant, and we did have findings on that one.
I seem to have the short version as well in my packet, so.
I have an extra copy in my hands if you want to.
I can share this. I can share.
Well, it's the file copy.
Yeah. Thank you.
Let me just see what we're talking about here. Is this the one you have? 29.
No.
This is different.
I'll go make a copy of this.
I've actually got two of them. If you want, someone else wants one.
Okay. No, I'll share. Okay, are there further questions for Mark or Kurt? Okay, then we'll return to, or now's the time where we'll take testimony from supporters of the appeal, supporters of the Central East Side Industrial Council position.
Okay, yes.
Do we have people signed up?
Yes, okay. We have 12 people signed up. The first three, please come on up, are Debbie Kitchen, Peter Stark, and Brian Scott. And they'll be followed by Michael Redman, Blake Redman, and Larry Corwin.
Okay, welcome. You just need to give us your name, and you each have 3 minutes, and there's a clock in front of you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today on the Design Commission decision appeal. I'm Debbie Kitchen. I'm president of the Central East Side Industrial Council, and I'm testifying on behalf of CEIC. The Central East Side Industrial District, or CEID, is home to over 17,000 jobs. We're only the district in the city that saw significant job growth during the recession. We are a vibrant district, creating not only new jobs, but new businesses with regional benefits. The CEID provides a unique and diverse mix of products. Our businesses produce and distribute building materials, food products, furniture, coffee, beer, bicycles, machinery, athletic equipment, computer apps, software, school uniforms, the list goes on and on. Many of the businesses are traded sector, meaning that they contribute, they sell some or all their products and services outside of the region, so they contribute to the long-term economic prosperity. Some of our businesses are local family-owned businesses that span generations and decades. Furthermore, the industrial district enhances the prospects for high-quality family wage jobs and opportunities which help meet the city's equity goals. The CEID has a mix of zoning, including properties zoned EX, which allows general office, retail, and multifamily housing, and the property at question is just that. So we're not disputing at all the zoning or the appropriateness of this development. But these properties with this zoning are along mostly the corridors, so MLK and Grand, Burnside, Morrison Belmont, and portions of Sandy Boulevard. Most of the rest of the district is zoned industrial, but this zoning mix creates issues at the edges, where EX properties are right across the street from industrial properties. Special attention is needed to maintain the viability of the industrial users as development intensifies in this EX properties. Freight movement in and out of these businesses is critical to their success. The narrowing of the street on two sides of this project negatively impacts the industrial users. Industrial businesses need to be protected against complaints by new tenants and residents so they can continue to operate in their allowed uses. If we do not protect the industrial uses of this district, it may lead some businesses to choose to move their operations and jobs outside of Portland, having a negative impact on the economic health of the city. We have the opportunity to preserve and nourish an economic district that is unique in the Central City, and frankly, it's unique in the nation. As new industries emerge, the Central East Side is a great place to start and grow businesses that will benefit our citizens and our community. So, making the decision for this appeal, we were very concerned about the narrowing of the street on two sides, and there are a number of businesses impacted as well as Gatto and Sons.
Debbie, can I ask a question?
Yes.
The street, as it might be redesigned, the size would still meet our current standards. Are you suggesting that all of the streets in the Central East Side should be expanded to the current size of these streets in order to meet?
No, and that is, we just would like to see, those are minimum standards, the current design standards, and we would like to see the street not narrowed. There are other places where it is at that width, but businesses have adjusted to it over time. What we're doing is adding, almost 250 units, grocery store, hardware store, and in that situation, we think it's going to put a lot of pressure on those streets, so we would prefer that either the sidewalk be narrowed or there be an exaction from the property owner. And the paper wall that Peter Finley Fry referred to it won't be possible to do that exaction once you have those walls in place as designed or as approved by the design review.
I just want to observe that, generally we in government are more comfortable with rules of general applicability, and the general assumption is if you're within those rules, you're okay, and if the rules are bad, they should be changed, and proceeding along the lines of, well, this is this is within the rules, but we don't want to do it because people have gotten used to something else, is something that makes me feel a little squeamish.
Yeah. Well, and I think when we worked on those rules, I think it was 2008 is what I've heard. I wasn't involved in that process, but I don't think we contemplated anything close to this type of development in the, adjacent EX properties. It's been zoned EX for 30 years in that area, and we haven't had this intensive of a development happening. So I think it was partly not anticipated.
Thank you.
But to clarify again, you're not disputing the uses that are proposed on this site?
No. And I would also echo what Peter Freya says. Killian has been to our land use committee and our transportation committee a number of times. They've worked with the neighborhoods. They have been open and receptive to changes, but we just felt we needed to make this appeal in spite of that good relationship because of the narrowing of the street and the impact on the businesses.
Debbie, do you have a strong view as to whether we do this as a condition of approval versus some more informal mechanism, and I won't take your answer as a lack of confidence in this council or any future council, but I'd be interested in your view on that.
Well, I think we would feel more comfortable if it was a condition of approval, as part of that, because then we would know where things stand. And so I think that would be our desire. But I know you have to work within your guidelines and design review rules, and I'm not knowledgeable about those or what is possible. But I would rather see it as a condition of the approval.
Peter Stark, I'm the executive director of the Parking and Transportation Advisory Committee to the CEIC. Actually, Steve, you brought up a very good point. Currently, and this is working with Kurt Kruger, and Kurt and Killian's have worked with us quite a bit. Mm-hmm. We've been waiting for this project, and we're very excited to see it happen. But anyway, let me kind of step back to your question about the 12-foot right-of-way. There are a number of streets, and Kurt can confirm this, that are along the freight route that are much wider than 12 feet, 13 feet, 15 feet, 14 feet. And a lot of the businesses along those alignments have grown dependent upon that width to continue to do business. So even a slight change to an existing width can have dramatic impact. An example would be Burnside Cooch, where we modified the street width to accommodate some green streets and some other accommodations. and they could no longer turn the trucks on the street. So even though it may be a minimum standard per our standards, it still has a consequence. And I think we step back to the policy, well, I guess the comprehensive plan policy that tries to protect the industrial users. So so stepping into where we're at here, I think that there is a way that we can come up with a compromise that would work for all parties. The road itself, the width of the road, is a concern. And my understanding from the test, which unfortunately I did not attend, was that it exposed some problems that have been corrected, but I'm not sure it corrected all the problems. So one possible solution would be to put a temporary reprieve on the sidewalk standards, maybe make it grandfathered with the property use that's adjacent, that's dependent upon that width, that goes away after that use changes, that would accommodate the freight movement. The concern here is if we were to take every street in the Central East Side, bring it to the minimum standard of 12 feet, you would kill the businesses. They just wouldn't function. And it's because those businesses have grown dependent upon what's available for them to use as a resource. So even the slight change has an impact. The other thing I would mention, I have 50 seconds, there is a difference, obviously, between property investment and business investment. And I think the Killians are they're top-notch developers, and they have really worked hard with the community. They've worked hard with the CEIC, and I think, frankly, we're very lucky to have them doing this particular project. This project is very important for this council to hear because it is, in fact, the edge condition between that anything zone and industrial zone. So in addition to street standards, you mentioned apartments, there should be some design guideline standards that require that those apartments have soundproofing, that they have air intake away from the industrial users, that you minimize the impact of the industrial use adjacent to housing. Because housing and industrial don't get along well together. We're going to try to make it work, but it's tricky.
Peter, with respect, listening to you, I kind of draw the inference that the standard should be every street in this area should stay exactly the size it is now, whatever that happens to be, even though they vary wildly, because people have gotten used to it. And that just doesn't sound like a standard.
No, unless there's a request to reduce it, in which case the smallest it could be reduced would be 12 feet. But Peter Fry's paper barrier, if you will, happened here. I wasn't aware, for instance, that 12th Avenue or Taylor had been reduced because it met the standard. And so we didn't become aware of it until the property owners brought it to our attention. Now, there was a lot of outreach, but there was no reason for the Killians to bring it to our attention because it's the standard. So in trying to protect the industrial users, we had to step up and say, well, what are we going to do? We can't go to PBOT and make the request because they're following their own standards as far as street sidewalks, but City Council is the only body that could say, you know what, let's make an exception in this case, which is why we're here.
Sir, give us your name, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is Brian Scott, and I own a small business and building across the street from the proposed development at the corner of Southeast Taylor and 11th. My business has been at this location in the industrial sanctuary for 15 years. My business involves the design, manufacturing, warehousing of trade show and promotional materials for a number of local companies, including Tektronix, Nike, Adidas, and Radisys. My business depends upon shipping and receiving materials from our loading docks with trucks of various sizes coming and going numerous times each day. I'm asking that the design review and PBOT's decision to allow for the narrowing of Southeast 10th and Southeast Taylor be given another review. This decision to narrow these streets will affect the flow of traffic in and out of the industrial sanctuary, an area that depends upon the ability to freely transport the goods manufactured and sold in this area. My major concerns are as follows. Pedestrian and bicycle safety. Truck traffic, already high in this neighborhood, will be increased, along with bicycle and pedestrian traffic. Yet the city, again, is looking to reduce the lane widths of the adjacent streets. Again, the demonstration orchestrated by PBOT showed that it was not possible for for trucks to be able to access the loading docks. In this case, they're considering taking away parking in lieu of that, which already is tight in the industrial sanctuary. And I would heartily recommend that the council not look at reducing parking as a solution to this. The other one is the traffic impacts. The impacts of this development has not really been sufficiently studied in terms, as they spoke about before, and in terms of especially the increased car trips and decreased accessibility to the industrial properties. The number three, impacts to our industrial business operations. Again, the narrowed streets will result in reduced access for freight trucks in our shipping and receiving facilities. Four, the reduced parking opportunities. As I mentioned, the parking already, as I said, is so tight in this area that we have a hard time finding parking for our employees or our customers. In conclusion, I have grave concerns about being able to continue to have a viable business at my current locations if these issues are not addressed to a way that would allow us to be able to have free access of trucks and freight movement in the city. And I have no doubt that the City of Portland is interested in preserving and honoring its long-term commitment to our locally owned businesses situated within the industrial sanctuary and provide living wage jobs and strengthen our local economy. Thank you.
So what's the name of your business?
It's called GXI.
So you're at the corner of Taylor and
between
11th and 12th.
It'd be the northeast corner.
And where do trucks load and unload for your
business? We have a loading dock. It's at the corner of 11th and Taylor. It's a setback of about 30 feet. In addition to loading trucks there, we also occasionally will get tractor trailers in which we have to block a lane of 11th and offload them in the street, which is relatively common in the industrial east side.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you all.
Thank you.
Next three names?
Are Michael Redman, Blake Redman, and Larry Corwin. And they'll be followed by Myla Firestman, Hope Redman, and Kathleen Gatto.
Welcome. Just give us your name, and you have 3 minutes, and there's a clock there in front of you. We'll start with you.
Thank you. I'm Michael Redmond. I work at 1036 Southeast Taylor, which is directly across from the proposed new building. Thank you for hearing us, this appeal. We've been in business for 32 years. We started in a residential neighborhood on Southeast Stark in 1,000 square feet. And we're an incubator company. We grew up and we moved five. Then we grew up and we moved to the Central East Side Industrial Sanctuary in 1993. We moved there because we were out of the zone where we were supposed to be, and we moved into a zone now that we are legally supposed to operate in. We have been restoring historical renovations in Portland for 32 years, like Simon Benson House, the Governor Hotel, the Telegram Building, the Carriage House, putting them back to the original state. Portland has invested in saving historical architecture, and we believe that it is also shown that by the sanctuary, keeping the sanctuary there, the industrial sanctuary in the city of Portland. So we would like to see the streets stay the way we have grown accustomed to them being. And one of the things we do is we mill for most of the lumber companies in this city and the surrounding cities. Distero Lumber Company, International Wood Products, Par Lumber, Patrick Lumber. Patrick Lumber's a 100-year-old brokerage firm. They've been using us for 20 years. They bring in trucks from Canada. We machine that wood. We're unloading in the streets. We've, like it's been said, become able to do this and accustomed to this with the streets as wide as they are. We feel if the streets are narrowed, that is going to impact us to not be able to get these trucks anymore. The trucks are anywhere from 70 to 80 feet long, and they already are able to get in and to get out, but if you take off 2 to 3 feet, they're not going to be. So it will dramatically change what we do with them. These are just some of the lumber companies we work for. Before the goat blocks burned down, they were produce companies. They had lots of trucks, and we worked with them. Our trucks worked with their trucks. I think we need the streets the way they are for the new companies coming into the district. It will make it doable. I don't know what it'll look like if you shrink the streets. The sharp increase of the bike and the pedestrian traffic is a safety concern. We wish that if we're making the sidewalks 11 feet, you would keep the streets wide also. Thank you.
So I just want to make sure I'm clear where you are. Your business is Creative Woodworking?
Woodworking, correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Sir? Hi, good afternoon. Blake Redmond, also work at Creative Woodworking. I'm his son. It's a problem that I see being the forklift driver at Creative Woodworking is a safety concern for bikes, pedestrians, and cars. Shrinking the streets would only make that worse because as I'm loading trucks, the parameters are pretty tight between my forklift and the parked cars and the semi-truck I'm loading. And a lot of times I'll have bicyclists riding under my load, which is a massive problem. And we try to be careful with that, but it's only going to get worse if we densify it and shrink the street. The other